Former teacher out of the Lorraine School is now living in Amherst, and he's written many different books, mostly on, I guess, Wayne, what, the sport of baseball, right?
Primarily, yeah.
Where did your love of baseball come from?
Well, it's from my hometown. I grew up in Denora, Pennsylvania, which happens to be the hometown of Stan Musial. And, you know, growing up, we were constantly aware of that background and very proud. In fact, the town named itself the Home of Champions, but it's true. I mean, they had a running back named Deacon Dan Towler, who once led the league in rushing. And then a kid I graduated with, not a kid now, you know, but Ken Griffey Sr. So, you know, he continued the tradition there. And, of course, then he has his son, Junior, who gets more fame than the father, of course. So two Hall of Famers from a tiny steel town in western Pennsylvania. And then I always liked to read and write since I was like 6-7 years old. So combining sports with writing, and I was lucky to have a career as a writer.
But as a teacher, though, that was your, like, day job, as they say, right?
Correct, yeah. It was just one day I was reading this magazine I enjoyed. It was called Baseball Digest. Got an idea that was similar to the kind of stuff they published. So I sent off a manuscript, and I thought, if they don't buy it, I'll realize I'm just a teacher, and that's it, you know. But luckily, and it wasn't that great of an article, but the idea was a pretty solid concept. But they bought it, and that just triggered everything.
What were you teaching in school? What?
I taught at Southview High School English, and then later on I went to Whittier Middle School.
Okay.
And what was that first piece you pitched?
It was called Career Big Name Pitchers Who Are Career Losers. So I looked up all these guys in the Baseball Encyclopedia whose record was below 500, but pretty big names. I mean, I always thought Claude Osteen was a solid pitcher for the Dodgers and Bob Friend for the Pirates. But yet, you know, you look at their career, and for whatever reason, on a bad team, what have you, they were career losers.
You said Baseball Digest. This is, of course, before the internet and any time where people can sort of just type in any whimsy thing they want and kind of come up with answers. This is where the research had to come into it. And a lot of your books require that.
Oh, yeah.
Your current book that you have just coming out is called Remembering the Stars. Is it titled Remembering the Stars of the NFL Glory Years?
Right.
So what period of the glory years do we talk about for the NFL?
Right. I guess you always get that argument, and whatever period you grow up in is the golden years. But a lot of people do subscribe to the theory that the 50s and 60s were a more pure golden age of football. So I went with that, and of course that's basically the time period I grew up in. So just some magical names like Clevelanders, of course, always think of Jim Brown and even into Paul Warfield and guys like that.
Why do people look at that time period other than when they grew up? Why do they look at those years as golden years or glory days?
Right. I just suspect it's nostalgia. I mean, I sit here and say there's no doubt about it. The 50s and 60s with Aaron and Clemente and Willie Mays, Sandy Koufax, that has to be the glory. But you know for sure if somebody grew up with Jimmy Fox and Babe Ruth, or maybe nowadays Omar Vizquel and Tomei, they're thinking that was the golden era, I guess.
A lot of it does. This is like the post-war type of thing, where after the war, then you sort of have this boom in the United States. Also, probably this is where NFL really got its footing, I think, in a sense.
Yeah.
And then the 60s is when sort of television even blossomed even more.
Right.
With that more expansion of other teams. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about some of the stars. Who do you have featured? And when you thought about doing a book like this, who did you think, this is my checklist of who I need to research, contact, that type of thing?
Right. Well, I was lucky because I had done a book with Raymond Berry, his autobiography, and, you know, a Hall of Famer with a name like that, and he shared so many wonderful stories. It kind of, like a snowball, you know, led to this next guy, a lot of context with the Colts especially. But you have to start, as I do in my book organizationally, with Jim Brown for runners, and then Johnny Unitas for quarterbacks. So two of the guys that are featured very heavily right off the bat are those two guys.
When you're putting a book like this together, and sports books, everybody seems to have a different type of sports book, and what stories are you looking to put in there that might be unique to the book?
Well, anything that just strikes me, I guess, and I hope you have a little instinct after writing for a lot of years, but I always like to put in a touch of humor if I can. I think readers enjoy that. It's not too dreary, you know, too heavy of a topic. But I did organize the book in such a way that it features the stars, and then there's a chapter on the near superstars, the guys that didn't make the Hall of Fame, but guys like, I don't know if you remember Chuck Howley, who won the MVP in the Super Bowl, only a guy on a losing team to win it. He was a solid player, you know, all pro, and yet, again, not a Hall of Famer. So those two chapters covered a great gamut, a wide range of really good ballplayers. Then there was a chapter on the humor, as I touched on, and the toughest players, because people do think, again, if it's your golden period, that that was the area of really tough, hard-nosed guys. In fact, the editor and I chose the picture on the front cover, which is Dick Butkus, you know, kind of looming over a guy he's just knocked down, and he's actually pointing down at him like, you know, take that or don't run my way. So those are the kind of things I looked for, those marquee players and just little anecdotes that sometimes spice it up.
And in preparing the book, did you reflect back on games you saw on TV when you were younger, or did you search out video as well?
Not too much. Basically, my knowledge of the game, following it as a kid and reading and so on, was enough to, you know, sort of spawn questions for these guys. So we didn't delve into specific games too much, but, you know, when you talk to, there was a guy that grew up actually in the hometown of my wife across the river from me, a town called Manesson, a small town, but they produced 10 NFL 11, 12 guys. Well, this guy, Sam Haverlack, who was in the Super Bowl, and a little footnote on him, he was the only guy or the first guy to run with a ball, throw the ball. He was a halfback, but he threw a halfback option and catch a pass in a Super Bowl game. But he told me a story about one time where he's running and he thinks he's got a pretty wide open hole to go through. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, Butkus has blasted him, you know. And as he's getting off the ground, Haverlack, this guy says, I can only think of one thing to say, and it was, nice hit, Mr. Butkus, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
We're talking today with Wayne Stewart. His new book is Remembering the Stars of the NFL Glory Years, 1950s to 1960s. When I think of those pictures, you know, usually black and white, dirty uniforms. Sometimes the people have teeth missing at some point, or there's, you know, there's the violence sometimes is shown in a lot of that. What did some of these players have to tell you about? And maybe because of the 50-some years since then, they're more free to open up about things. What kind of stories or even humor stories did you get from them?
Well, I know you talked about the violence of the game. You know, that picture, famous picture you've probably seen of Y.A. Tittle. He's in the end zone, down on his knees with blood trickling down from his forehead. The players tended to think, by and large, that it was a more violent era. You know, of course, the quarterbacks that were so much are protected so heavily. Remember the quote from, I think it was Lambert of the Steelers, you know, that the quarterback should wear a dress. Well, most of the players said that time period was rougher, tougher. But every once in a while, you'd get a guy who would say, that's crazy. You know, everybody knows scientifically players are getting stronger, bigger, faster. So those were some things touched upon, the toughness of the era. As far as humor that I try to throw in, got a couple of quotes here from the book that I kind of liked. You remember Tom Landry had that reputation for being stoical, never showing emotion, never smiling, you know, very business-like appearance. Well, after his career with the Cowboys was over, fullback Walt Garrison was asked if he had ever seen Tom Landry smile. And Garrison just sort of grinned and said, well, I don't know. I only played there 9 years, you know. So I like that, too, when you can come across an anecdote, something like that. Yeah.
I only saw Tom Landry smile once after he retired. In some other kind of venue, whether it was, maybe a golf thing or something, or he was just somewhere.
Right.
And maybe that was just, you know, if you saw him at home, probably he would smile. But right. There was that 3 hours on a Sunday where he's, you know, focusing and you know, he had results, so I can't complain.
That's for sure.
About that. Who was somebody that you got to interview, and as an author, you probably think, you know, sometimes it's self-serving to a sense, like, well, now I'll get a reason to talk to this person.
Right.
And then I'll have a story to write about it. Mm-hmm. Who maybe in this book did you think, this is somebody maybe not, you know, on a top A-list or something that you had, but you wanted to put in this book or pay a little bit of respect to?
Yeah, I think pay a little respect, probably. It was just a natural pipeline that I had, too, with we call it the Valley back home, the Mon Valley area around Pittsburgh. And there were so many guys. I mentioned the city of Manesson that had NFL players. And guys like Sam Haverlack, not famous, except as that trivia footnote. But there were guys like Fred Cox, who was a kicker for the Vikings. There were guys like, Deacon Dan Toller, I mentioned, of Denora. And I wanted to, I guess, sort of pay tribute to my roots by talking to these guys. But obviously, you don't just stick them in there gratuitously. These guys have some stories to tell. And even guys who are obscure, but they made it to the big time, you know, they have interesting stories. So, yeah.
When you look back at Jim Brown's career, what really jumped out at you?
Yeah, I happen to bring some stats on him, and I tell you, to me it's still astonishing. I mean, you can rattle off all kind of stats on him, but one that kind of stands out is he averaged 104.3 yards every game for his entire career. I read that he only missed one series of downs ever, so durable was he. But nobody ever since, Eric Dickerson, none of these guys have averaged 100 yards every game, you know, day in and day out, or week in and week out. And there was a story about Brown that was told to me by Gino Marchetti. He used to be called the greatest defensive end of all time. Marchetti said they were in a Pro Bowl game one time, and Brown has the ball. Marchetti sheds a tack when he's got a one-on-one shot on Jim Brown. So this is a quote. I kind of grabbed him, and then I made the tackle. I got up, and I felt pretty good about it. There he is down, and there I am in my first Pro Bowl game. Then I heard the announcement. Tackle by Marchetti. Ball carrier Jim Brown, second and one. He said, second and one? He had dragged me for 9 yards. So even if you think you got a good hit on Jim Brown, he's going to drag you, carry you for considerable yardage.
Wow, that's pretty good. I like that. Not only do we as fans get to see it, but some of the players who encountered him obviously now have stories of that. And, of course, they get to see it all up close and get a sense like that. Did you talk with Jim Brown? Did you get
the
chance?
No. Okay. A lot of the guys were accessible, but certain ones just... whatever, too busy or whatever, yeah.
And, of course, this is one of many books. You kind of fluctuate, I guess, books on stories of individuals as well as then sort of like trivia or things like that. Your baseball books also sometimes deal with family and dads. What's your appeal in that regard?
Well, actually, I love to get involved with the project, and that was just an instance where one of my editors said to me, I have an idea. So that was sheer luck that I stumbled across that. But I think part of it was because he knew that I had a connection with the Griffies, and that's a good chapter in a book about fathers and sons. And so pretty much he told me to write that book, and that was way back in 2002 or 4 or something like that. But then he moved on to a different company, and years later he said, let's do another book on called Baseball Dads that won't necessarily be like two generation or even three generation families, but it'll just be touching stories. And boy, the Cleveland Indians had some good ones there as far as one guy, I can't remember his name, but his wife, and he wasn't a star player whatsoever, but his wife was delivering a baby and having all kind of complications. He was in, let's say, Cleveland, and he was on the road maybe in Boston, and his wife was back here in Cleveland. And the guys just chipped in and said, don't worry about anything. We're going to take care of all expenses, and bought a first-class plane trip, you know, red eye, whatever, and boom. Just real touching stuff like that.
So it's interesting to see the different stories as besides just what you see on the sports page and the numbers that you get to see later after their careers. It's always good to look at. Again, the book is called Remembering the Stars of the NFL Glory Years, 1950s and 1960s. The book is out now, today, tomorrow.
They told me the 16th or 18th, or maybe my memory shot.
But have they sent you copies of this yet?
I will, but not now.
Okay.
They worry about the bookstores first.
And they get it populated. What's the cover look like again?
That cover has in big letters featuring the glory days of the NFL, and it's got that shot of Butkus.
Okay.
Just intimidating guy, of course.
So that's the new book from author Wayne Stewart, who lives now in Amherst. Spent many years at, Whittier Middle School?
Yeah, most of my teaching career was at Whittier Middle School, South Lorraine.
All right. Now, do you get up early like this and start writing? Am I interrupting your writing day coming out here, or what?
That's the sweet thing about writing. It's, some people, it varies. Some people say I'm a morning person, and boom, and other people work at, 1 in the morning. But I'm pretty flexible whenever there's a good chance to sit down. Or in the summertime, I try to pick a rainy day to do a bulk of my writing so that I can be lazy on a nice summer day. So it really fluctuates.
See, here's somebody who likes rainy days, Craig. Mm-hmm. Next time we do a forecast, we know that Wayne's probably busy writing his next book.
Well, in our milestone from earlier,
yes,
the longer one we read,
right?
That woman talked about the benefits of rainy days.
Yeah, she says that, so... she enjoys that, too, like many of us on some days. But we're glad it's not raining. We are broadcasting inside outside at the Arabica on Park Avenue. The doors are open. We get the breeze coming through. And as the people are getting ready for their Monday morning, as we begin our spotlight on Amherst, day one here.